Thank you, Marlene, and welcome everybody. I assume that you're listening today because you have a dawdler, or you have a procrastinator, or you have a child who's just plain lazy. It may even be that that you're the one who has trouble meeting deadlines. Regardless, I'm really glad you're here, and I hope that you leave encouraged. As Marlene mentioned, I homeschooled for 15 years, so I've experienced my share of these issues among my own kids. And if it makes you feel any better, I also happen to be the poster child for procrastination, so I have found a great deal of success in using some of these principles in my own life. Laziness and procrastination are really like thieves. They can rob your children of three things: a sense of accomplishment, their feelings of self-worth, and the motivation to improve themselves. What do you see with these kids? Their assignments are late, reports or projects are thrown together at the last minute, their work is sloppy and haphazard. Maybe they even have assignments that are missing entirely, and you're wondering, where is this grammar page or writing assignment? Laziness is a problem that affects many areas of home and school life. So if you're finding that your kids are lazy in one area, such as turning in writing assignments, chances are pretty good that they're lazy in other areas of their lives too. And many of the problems and solutions that we look at today are going to apply across the board, whether you're dealing with school-related laziness or chores or whatever. So I think you'll be able to find application as we go through each different section today. So sometimes people just want to know, what is it, laziness or is it procrastination? As a parent, I know for me it really didn't matter. All I knew is that I couldn't get a fire lit under my child to save my life or his, and so But as I started to prepare for this talk a number of years ago, I did some comparing and reading, and I found that there is a subtle difference between the two. So let's look at them. If you were to define laziness, you would most likely determine that it's a lack of desire to perform work or to expend effort. The lazy student is just plain unwilling. This usually boils down to being a character issue that can manifest in things like disobedience or resistance, or maybe they're just non-compliant or careless. Maybe they're even lying about having done their work just to get approval. See, the problem here is that a lazy child often fears failure. So it may sound convoluted, but by not completing assignments, he avoids feeling inadequate. His mind is sort of thinking, if I don't do my work at all, there's no way Mom can criticize it. He may also have learned that if he doesn't do an assignment, you will eventually forget about it or simply let it slide. Unfortunately, Moms, this proves to him that laziness works, and unfortunately, he wins. So procrastination. This is a little bit different. It's the habit of intentionally delaying work on important tasks that need to be done. Where laziness is a character issue, procrastination is a personality trait or a habit to persistently postpone and avoid starting or finishing a task. Procrastination is a natural defense mechanism. It's part of the human experience. It kind of protects you from fear, failure, and criticism. It keeps you away from things that stress you out. But ironically, procrastination also stresses us out. When we feel overwhelmed, what do? We put off tasks we don't want to do. Anything that's distasteful, we stall, we just don't want to do it. Even those that seem big and scary, such as cleaning the garage or getting ready for a big party, those things, because it's like the elephant, and we haven't learned to eat the elephant one bite at a time, so in the last minute frenzy, we're trying to do it all. We're trying to shop and bake and clean and decorate. And sometimes, maybe this is you, I know for me, I often will say, oh, I just work better under pressure. So the time rushes forward and the deadline looms, and we're frantically sweeping piles of laundry and schoolwork into drawers and closets, and we forget about the balloons and we forget about the streamers, and we send our husband off to Walgreens at the last minute for a gift card because we never got around to buying a present. And these are some of the things that happen when we procrastinate. I found this really cool infographic and got permission to use it on my slide, the stages of procrastination. And it makes perfect sense to realize that procrastination actually has a cycle. You start off with this false sense of security. Ah, well, this isn't really due for a while. I'll just kind of take it easy. Then it kind of morphs into a bit of laziness. Maybe I should get a head start. Nah, forget it. And then the excuses start. I've got this to do, I've got that to do. I have to run this child here, or the, you know, even if it's your own child, but I'm just thinking right now of me as a mom, a grandma. There's always something that's keeping me from doing what I need to do. Then comes denial, and that's the hard one. When you start to think that you've got time and you're just sort of pretending that this big project isn't happening, and you don't need sleep, you don't need help, you just fall into crisis, which is the fifth step. And then you vow that you will never put anything off again, and then you repeat the cycle. So this is pretty normal, and if you're a procrastinator, I imagine that you have found yourself doing these very things. There are costs to count when you procrastinate. Psychology professor Joseph Ferrari says procrastinators generally don't do well under pressure. The idea that time pressure improves performance is a myth. And he says that in truth, both laziness and procrastination can result in a number of problems. One of them is poor performance and inefficiency. So when you put things off, it means you have less time to complete tasks. So your child is waiting to the very last minute to do something. That means there is less time not only to complete it, but to do it well. So this rushing or this lackluster effort is going to give poor results. I'm going to give you a personal example of procrastination. It's a pretty extreme. It was the hill to die on, and I blew it. And this was my wedding, which was almost 39 years ago. But the memory of this is very strong. My husband and I decided, well, my fiancé at the time, that we were going to write our own vows and speak them to each other at the ceremony. This was the 70s, and everything was just, you know, really casual, and, you know, you just kind of go with the flow, but we still wanted to have this sort of a plan. But our clergyman was not very good about holding us accountable. I had no direction from my parents, and I was the take charge person. I was too busy taking care of everyone else, making bridesmaids' dresses, making my wedding dress, taking care of this, taking care of that, and I didn't pace myself well. So there I am at the altar. Well, my husband is speaking to me this carefully planned and thought out wedding vow, and I am mumbling a bunch of I love you so much and who knows what else, because I hadn't taken the time or fit it in. It just kept falling to the bottom of the pile. And that's what procrastination does. It puts you into a place of regret sometimes, like for this, the most important event of my life. Thankfully, my commitment ran deep as we're celebrating many, many years of marriage. But, you know, it's an extreme example, but it does show you that there is a great consequence that can come from putting things off. Health and sleep problems can also come from waiting till the last minute, especially if you become anxious or you panic as the tasks pile up, and you feel guilty, and then these things just kind of snowball, and pretty soon you're stressing and losing sleep. So I'm going to spend most of the time talking about solutions, but first I want to talk about helping you identify some of the causes of laziness and procrastination. Is it age? It just may be that your kids are too young to do their work without guidance. Young children don't yet have the experience that would help them plan their time and follow through to completion. Is it lack of confidence? Your child may feel like she's a failure in everything. If you have a kiddo who's really hard on herself, being lazy can prevent accomplishing the task, which in turn eliminates the risk of further failure. Is it perfectionism? A lot of kids think, if I don't have time to do it perfectly, I'm not going to start at all. They don't have room in their world for a mistake to take place, even on a rough draft. For some kids, it may be indifference. Are they bored? Do they lack motivation? It doesn't mean they shouldn't do the task at hand, but it certainly can mean that they have less inclination to get it done. Is it lack of energy? Is it related to diet or sleep or lack of exercise? A teen's need for sleep is highly, there's a lot of research, a lot of proof to a teen's need for sleep. They need something like 9.5 hours of sleep a night, and many teens are not getting enough, and it can have consequences in their ability to focus and concentrate and get their schoolwork done, and it can manifest itself as laziness or procrastination. Another question you can ask yourself is my child easily distracted? Distractibility contributes to procrastination. I mean, face it. Even in my day when we didn't have internet, there's no shortage of interesting and exciting and pressing things to do than schoolwork, whether it's playing outside or whether it's media, whether it's Facebook, texting, video games, TV. Some kids love to read, and that is their escape mechanism. Or maybe if they're distracted by siblings or friends who have already finished their schooling for the day. Clutter and disorganization can also be a distraction. Like, for instance, for me, before this workshop, I wanted to make sure that I was not distracted by things I cleared off my desk to reduce any visual clutter. That's just, for many kids, that's just a good thing to do in practice to keep their, help keep their focus. My son, Ben, was totally distracted. He would, if you left anything on the kitchen table, let's say we were doing school after breakfast and there was a, you know, a box of cereal or a spoon, he and I might be sitting side by side with his math book between us, and we may be talking about the subject at hand, and he may have his eye on the math book, but his hand is inching its way across the table toward the spoon, and pretty soon the spoon is banging on the table or dropping on the floor. And so for him, I had to give him a stress ball, one of those little squishy balls that he could hold in his hand that kept him quietly occupied, kept his hands busy while we, to help eliminate distraction, but also just to cut down on the visual clutter. For many students, daydreaming is a big distraction. One of my daughters and her family have been living with us for this past year. They bought a hugely needy fixer-upper, their first home, and they've had to gut it and start from scratch. So they've been living with us during the remodeling. And one of their four children is a terrible dawdler. It takes him a half an hour to get dressed in the morning, every single morning, because he sits on his bed and stares into space. He spends hours on math lessons or other schoolwork that he could finish in less than half the time. He isn't lazy, really, but his mind wanders. And I imagine that there are some of you who have children like this. Daydreaming can be a sign of boredom in a bright or an exceptional child. They just have more interesting things to think about, right? But it can also be symptomatic of something like ADD, and that could be something for you to watch for and consider. And then finally, is your child just plain stuck? Maybe she's overwhelmed by the size of the project. Maybe she doesn't know what the goals are, and they're all unclear and fuzzy to her. People drag their feet when they view tasks in abstract terms or in giant pieces, giant projects. They don't know where to start. They don't know how to start. They don't know what to do next. So that could be the issue that's facing your child when it comes to this perception of whether they're lazy or procrastinators or whatever. Okay, so let's try some strategies to benefit these children. We've talked about what laziness is. We've talked about what procrastination is and really how very blurred, as you can see, the lines are between them. Putting off a writing assignment or any project or task until the last minute can lead to a rushed and sloppy product that's finished in haste at the very last minute before it's due. It may also leave your child feeling too pressured or too anxious to do a decent job. Both the lazy student and the procrastinator need a strategy. So let's talk about some ways to help your child make wiser use of time. The first thing that I will suggest for helping these students is to provide a predictable plan for them. Stick to a routine. Let's consider toddlers and young children and how much they love ritual. If they didn't love ritual and it wasn't obvious to you, just think about how many times they want to hear the same story read over and over again. They love that. It's very important to them, and it helps to develop good habits in them that you may be struggling to break in your older kids. For example, always having them pick up toys before lunch or always brushing teeth before bed. This creates rituals that will stick with them as they grow. It's pretty easy to convince younger children that anything is important or fun. And you can have enthusiasm for completing a task, make a game out of it, use a timer to gain their cooperation. So these are things that you can do with your little ones. Now, many children, not just young ones, need predictability. It could just be part of their personality. They will become unhinged when their world lacks order. And, you know, you can raise your little hand silently if you have one of those children. I did, my middle daughter. She would ask me, "Mom, what are we doing today?" And I would say, "We're doing school today." And then the next day, "Mom, what are we doing today?" "We're doing school today." And the question would come every single day to the point where I would start to get angry and say, "We're doing school today. What else would we be doing?" And then the light bulb went on. She wasn't really asking me what about school. She knew we were doing school, but she was such a little creature of predictability and habit that she just wanted me to assure her that there was nothing else that was going to rock her little world. Are we going to the dentist after school? Do I have piano lessons today? Is this my Girl Scout day? Those were the things she was asking me, not whether we were doing school. So if you have a child who needs predictability, make sure, especially for these children, to provide routine, because routine equals security and it teaches good habits. Now, your teens, older students, are also going to benefit from a routine. They may not think they will, but they do benefit from having stability. Now, I'm not saying be rigid, but to have a general sense of order. If you're always flying by the seat of your pants, it doesn't create an atmosphere of comfort and a sense of confidence in your kids. It can make them feel kind of wigged out, especially if they are not fly by the seat of your pants kind of kiddos. So one thing that you can do is to post a schedule. The lazy child needs to know exactly what to do each day and when assignments are due. So you might want to do something like post a dry erase calendar that your teen can use to see life at a glance. So this is not just school assignments, but it may include soccer practices and games or babysitting or other jobs that they may have, just whatever that they have in their day that could go on this master calendar so that they can work around if they've got a school assignment that needs planning. They don't pick a super busy day to do it. I have a son who did speech and debate throughout high school, and there were many days where he had to, he was gone on what would have been a normal school day. He was at a debate conference, and sometimes he had to travel on Fridays or Thursdays even. And so we had to make sure that his calendar accommodated the schoolwork that had to be done when he wasn't traveling. Nowadays, if your teens have phones, they can take advantage of the Google Calendar phone alerts. You don't have to have an iPhone. Any phone can accommodate a Google Calendar so that it might beep for them. Note cards due tomorrow. Storyboard, you know, due for such and such an assignment or whatever. And then speaking of storyboards, you can actually create a storyboard for a younger child showing each step and a due date. So you can make a big poster or take a piece of paper, and each sheet of paper can be one activity with a step and a due date, and you can tape them to the wall or something so that your kids can see, the little ones, what they have to do and when, so that they realize, because especially when they're young, they don't have a good concept of time and when things are due, and they need that hand-holding. Also, provide your kids with structure. Now, I talk about writing primarily because that's what I do, but with any subject, when it comes to writing, how can you guarantee or at least increase the probability that your slothful student actually does the work? With writing, you can make sure that the steps of the writing process are built into the program that you're using, so there's no escaping the responsibility. For instance, if the program insists that the student brainstorm before writing and then write a rough draft and then edit and revise before receiving a grade, it's not, those things are built into the assignments, and so the student realizes these are things that have to be done. It's not just a mean mom who's imposing them on me. These are part of the lesson. Structure and steps like these will help to keep your perfectionist kind of freeze at bay. If they realize I don't have to be perfect, I'll just do the best I can, that's good. That's good. Mom's perfectionism can ruin productivity. So part of this is just going to be constantly reminding your child that he's human, that there's no such thing as perfect, that we're on a path and it's a learning process. So we focus our efforts on tasks where excellence counts. All other bits just kind of need to get done, but pour your greatest efforts into the things that require excellence. And again, separate the excellence from perfection so you don't put unnecessary pressure on your child. Another strategy, make it doable. Divide assignments into small bites. I talked about the elephant, and that's just, you know, the expression, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Well, the same thing with your assignment. You make a task look small and easy, and then it seems like it's doable. For example, I've planned 3 weddings. You can choose to be overwhelmed, or instead you can have lists that break things down so that you do things in due time. So instead of looking at, oh my gosh, I have to plan a wedding, I think, okay, I need to get a venue, I need to think about centerpieces and flowers and food and helpers, and then you only do a small part of the task at a time. So with your child, if you say clean your desk, that can be the most unproductive directive to give an 8-year-old. Instead, say, okay, I want you to collect and put away all the pens and pencils. Or with younger ones, I want you to put away everything that's red. Next, let's put away everything that's green. And it gives them a task and a way to do it that's more fun, but it also breaks it up into something that's manageable for them. With a school assignment, instead of saying, I want you to write a report, you say, find and read 3 articles about your topic. Okay, that's one assignment. Write the introductory paragraph. That's an assignment. bits and pieces, bite-sized, small, doable, measurable increments will get more done than giving your child this massive, scary thing that just looks overwhelming. I really love the 15-minute plan. You can do anything in 15 minutes. You know, you can empty the dishwasher, you can straighten a drawer, you can plan a few lessons for your kids. If you give them a timer and you set it for 15 minutes, then at the end of the time, they can switch to something else. Chances are they'll get involved enough to keep going. But if not, at least they've given 15 devoted minutes. And for kids who especially tend to wander, this really is good for helping them be focused. If you use a timer, try to avoid a ticking timer because that can be distracting. Now, if you have teens, here's a great app that I found for the computer that you can use during internet sessions to keep your kids from just taking little, oh, I'm just going to check my Facebook page real fast, or oh, I'm just going to go, you know, look at iTunes or whatever. It's called Strict Workflow. And you install it on your computer, on your desktop, your laptop, and then when you click the little apple, for 25 minutes, your child can't access the sites that you have listed. So for myself, I do this for myself. I have Facebook, and I have, what else do I have? My blog, and a couple of other things where I tend to want to just, oh, peek in on. But when you just peek in on something, you can lose 5 minutes of time trying to reorient yourself when you get back to the task. So this is great, and I would recommend it, especially for your teens who do work on the computer. Give time limits to these kiddos. Open-ended deadlines are not a lazy student's privilege, and they are disastrous for the procrastinator. Establish a deadline for the writing project or the science project or the history report. When you don't give a cutoff date, what are you doing? You're implying that your child can put the task off indefinitely. So give limits, stick to the limits, and expect your child to complete a certain amount of work in a set amount of time. Consider assigning frequent due dates. So, yes, a deadline is important, but it doesn't ensure that your student's going to pace herself well. So in addition to assigning a distant due date, 3 weeks out or whatever, for the whole composition or the whole report, give more frequent due dates for parts of the project, for those little bites that I was talking about earlier. So for a short composition, you might want to assign brainstorming, rough draft, self-editing, second draft, time for you to do parent editing, and time for your child to write a final draft. For a report or a term paper, you would want to also make sure that you're checking topic ideas and their note cards, their outlines, and so forth. So whatever the project, break it up into the most measurable and logical steps, and then assign them, but also check on them. The writing process, by its very nature, is a series of steps, but the procrastinator is especially prone to skipping steps altogether or cramming several steps into one last-ditch writing session. But assignments that are spread over several days or weeks with little mini due dates that are scheduled along the way are going to help train her to spread out her work and not save it all till the very last minute. It's going to be good for all of you, not just her. A schedule or a plan that outlines each step makes the best defense against procrastination. And again, this can apply to any subject, not just writing. Remind your child, you don't have to finish this project now, really. You just have to begin it now. Kids can get overwhelmed by the idea of having to complete the task. So instead, help them focus their thoughts and their energy just on getting started. Also, remind them that they don't have to work all day on it. Set time limits, take breaks, 30 minutes of work, 10-minute break. Or, again, go back to the 15-minute time plan. Another thing is to encourage a do-it-first attitude. If you tackle a task that's unpleasant or disagreeable, first thing when you start your school day, when your kiddos are fresh, when they're alert, this will often mean greater progress in shorter time. If they save, and I know you've seen this in your schooling, I know you have, if they save the task that they hate the most, like math or whatever, for the very end of the day, they're still doing it at dinner time. So sometimes you just need to push it to the front and make sure that it gets done while everybody's fresh and happy. Identify lesson expectations. Make sure your child understands what's required. He's going to need measurable targets. He's not going to need fuzzy instructions. If he's scratching his head over what to do, it only makes the project less appealing and more challenging. He needs to see step one, step two, step three. Specific, detailed directions are invaluable to the lazy child. Make the tasks concrete for him. So, for instance, research shows that people act in a timely way when given concrete tasks. They dawdle when they view the tasks in abstract terms. So, here's an example. Abstract would be, write about raising horses. But a concrete assignment would be, make a mind map and brainstorm about raising horses. Even better would be, let's talk about ideas and brainstorm some ideas about the care and feeding of horses. So you're narrowing the topic and making it more doable, less abstract, less fuzzy, and more accessible. Require accountability of your kids and also provide supervision over their work. I'm not telling you anything new when I say being a good model sets your children up for success. You remain their best example. If you're always running late, if you're always scrambling in the morning to figure out what the day's school assignments are, if you're hitting the grocery store at 4 o'clock every day because dinner hasn't been planned, again, you're rushing out to Target to buy a birthday gift on your way to the party, your actions are speaking volumes to your kids. You may be trying to hold their feet to the fire at home, but they are watching you procrastinate in action. When it's school time, you can model for your kids by doing your own, quote, homework while you're sitting next to your toddlers. It may be that they just need you next to them. I had a child who was like that, my son. It didn't matter if I was in the room or sitting next to him. He needed to be able to see me. It seemed to give him enough motivation and impetus to do his work. So whether you're sitting next to them or you're sitting, standing at the kitchen counter while they're sitting at the table, whatever. You may do reading that you need to catch up on. You might sort through mail and bills. You might take some time to do lesson planning. Your kids will tend to be more focused if they see you setting a similar example. One of the things that I used to do all the time with my kids while they were doing their schoolwork was sit with them at the table and lesson plan. And for me, that was just really a valuable time because I was right there with them if they needed me, but I could get a big chunk of planning done at the same time, and that was always very helpful. It might be good for you to think of your home as a library. So during school hours, do everything you can to make your home a place that limits distractions and helps your kids to focus. Try to be disciplined about your own use of computer and phone, especially during school time. And stay on top of things. A child who rarely finishes a writing assignment or a math assignment can't be left to learn or even just work on her own. This is going to be problematic because the approach is failing her. If it's true of your child, you might need to step in and become more involved in teaching or guiding or editing, grading work. She might not appreciate your interference, but if she's not succeeding on her own, clearly something has to change. So begin by working closely with her to introduce and model and teach new concepts. And after that, you can let her work independently on her assignments. If she keeps struggling or misses deadlines or she's not getting her best efforts, then at that point, you might need to step in and spend more one-on-one time together with her while she works. And then as she's throwing herself more fully into her work and she gives her effort, her best efforts, then you can start backing off again. And don't neglect following up. With writing, students need to allow drafts to rest between writing sessions. It's just really important to the process. And it keeps them from being too close to it when they can step back. But since the procrastinator, the lazy kiddo, the dawdler tends to wait till the last minute, typically she's left herself no wiggle room. There's no time for revising. There's no time for refining. So make sure you hold her accountable along the way with checklists and due dates and check her work regularly so that you're keeping her on track. As the parent and the teacher, really, you're responsible to ensure that your child is doing the work and sticking to her deadlines. You can put as much of this on your child as possible, but it's your job to make sure that these things are getting done. And we homeschoolers can get lax about this. If you say, I'll check over your work later, but then you don't do it, you continue to perpetuate the problem of procrastination. By not checking up on her, by not asking to see her assignments, you are modeling the very behavior you're trying to correct. So, yes, it can be inconvenient. Yes, it may put a cramp in your style. But direct supervision is really the main way to deal with this behavior. First and foremost, make your lazy student work. This probably means you will have to sit with him or her until the task is finished. The child may not like it, but he needs to earn the right to work independently. Stick it out, don't give up, and then keep, you know, you let the rope out, you might have to pull it back in a bit, let it out, pull it back in, until you see that independence is starting to take foot. Checklists are really an important part of accountability. It's a tool that's necessary for all students, especially helpful for lazy students and procrastinators. Okay, so let me ask you, are you a list maker? If you are, you probably know the satisfaction of checking things off your list when you're finished. As a matter of fact, how many times have you actually done something and then thought, I'm going to write it on my list just so I can check it off? Give your kids a list, too. It may be a daily assignment or a chore list. For example, I gave my kids assignment books, and every day I would write their lessons out. And I mean, this, we go back before we had a computer in our house, back to the early 90s. And so I would write down their daily assignments, and they could do their work in any order they wanted as long as they got it all done by the end of the day. If they started to trip up, like I mentioned before, and they were waiting till the last minute to do one assignment habitually, and it was always late, or they were always stressing out and at dinner time and they're still struggling over this assignment, then we would move that assignment to the front of the line. They would have to do that one first each day until they maybe a week or two would go by. Then I'd let them try again. Okay, you can go back to doing things in any order. And if it starts to, the same habits start to happen, then we're going to move this back up again. You can make a project-specific list or a task-specific list. Let's take writing as an example. Proofreading is an important lifelong skill. Self-editing helps any student to take responsibility for his progress because he's learning and taking the time to look for errors. Ideally, the lazy student would need some sort of checklist as a guide to help him identify the errors in his paper, content errors, style, mechanics errors, and so forth. A checklist is going to remind him of every element that needs his attention. As he compares his rough draft to the checklist, then he can make corrections and improvements. Now, if you have a lazy kiddo, their tendency is to check the boxes willy-nilly with their eyes glazed over. Even if they didn't actually do it, they would just check it and say, yeah, I did that. The diligent parent is going to recognize that this is a character flaw in her child, and she's going to work through the writing assignment with him to help develop the qualities of diligence, discipline, and initiative. and honesty, because that plays into it too. Eventually, through your perseverance, your student is going to learn that writing is a process and that editing and revising are as much a part of that process as the actual writing. And you can make similar checklists for other assignments and other subjects as well. In addition to these things that I've just mentioned, there's some others that you can look at that will also benefit your toddler. One of them is going to seem really obvious is good health. When a child is hungry or tired or grouchy, it can manifest in laziness or distractibility. So make sure your kids are eating healthy, that they're exercising, they're getting enough sleep. Again, with teens, sleep can be a very legitimate demand, and the studies confirm what you've already seen with your own kids. They need to sleep, but you also need to make sure that they're getting things done. I know for many families, they've come to the realization that their kids' body clocks are just different. And if they let their kids sleep later and start later and go to bed later, they may be more productive than the child who is forced to get up early and then goes to bed at an earlier hour and lays there and can't fall asleep and ends up with a sacrificed amount of time of sleep. So just you might even want to just do a little bit of research on teens and sleep to solidify in your own mind that this is legitimate and they're not just pulling your leg. Make sure to do something physical during breaks between tasks. Get the blood flowing. Give them healthy snacks throughout the day to keep their energy level high. Keep to a routine, your consistent schedule for schoolwork, for meals, for bedtime. You want to be flexible, but again, have a fairly consistent schedule. Another thing is to offer choices and responsibility. Unfortunately, many children grow up unable to make decisions because they haven't had much experience doing so. I don't see this in homeschooling as much as I do in other areas, because as homeschoolers, we tend to make decision-making as a part of our lifestyle. But if you're making all the decisions for your kids, when they feel like they have no control, they can become passive-aggressive. And one of the ways that they can manifest this is by dragging their feet and procrastinating. It's a form of exercising control over you, because what they're saying with their actions is, there is nothing you can do to make me work faster. This attitude is sin, plain and simple. I'm not advocating that you let your child run the home by any means, but I'm saying providing the child with a choice simply helps avoid power struggles, and it reduces frustration while you're gaining his cooperation. So your unmotivated student might benefit from having choices such as what topic to write about or whether to do his writing assignment at his desk or at the kitchen table. You have to take the other things into consideration. You wouldn't want him at his desk if distractibility is a problem. But if that's not the issue and he will do his work at his desk, don't force him to sit at the kitchen table if he will be, if that is not the hill to die on. Minimize distractions. Avoid the TV, the internet, the cell phone. Avoid over-involvement in outside activities that keep you away from home. Are you gone 2 days a week for co-ops and classes and piano lessons and things that are all filling up your school hours, and then that stresses your kids for getting things done during the remaining time? And again, be that example to them. Are you checking Instagram and email and Facebook every 5 minutes? If you are, that's not a healthy example for your children. Let's talk about rewards for a second. Learn what motivates your child. Does he thrive on recognition? Don't save all your praise for an end product, such as a final draft, that might not materialize. Instead, make sure you're giving your kids kudos for small steps of progress along the way. So you might reward your daughter for finishing early rather than punishing her for turning something in late. Show her you're watching for positive behavior. Sometimes our kids feel like we're lying in wait for the moment that they trip up. So instead, be looking for the things they did well. Does your student respond to rewards? If so, come up with ways to reward the steps of progress. And this will definitely depend on age. So you might consider using a progress chart or a marble jar for younger kids, some other reward system. They can earn rewards such as going out for ice cream. They can earn free time privileges. These are good for your teens. Completing his brainstorming on time or writing his rough draft may earn computer time or TV time or video games. Finishing a task ahead of the due date could merit even more time to spend with friends or read for pleasure or work on hobbies. So, does he thrive in recognition? Does he respond to rewards? Let's try another one. Does he doubt himself? A lazy student may not believe he has any strengths, whether it's writing or math or hobbies. So you want to kind of watch for something where he shows interest and aptitudes. Maybe it's baking, maybe it's drawing or tennis. But if a child feels like he can't do anything right, it's really important to begin to find something that he can do well. And that will be a place of confidence building. As William James aptly put it, nothing is so fatiguing as the eternal hanging on of an uncompleted task. Past writing failures, past lazy experiences don't have to be accurate predictors of future success. With a few adjustments in attitude or method, your children can get back on track and they can have time to spare. That wraps up our presentation. I think we have a few minutes left for questions. I do want to let you know that, you know, it may be kind of hard for you to write down all of my links, but if you go to our blog, which you can is linked there in the chat, you can find all of our social media buttons at the top of the blog, and that will be helpful for you just to be able to link directly. And if you have any specific questions, you're always welcome to email me. I do my best to get back to you within a day or so. Right now we're in heavy project mode trying to get our next level of Write Shop published, and so I'm scrambling with that, but I will get back to you if you have personal questions for me. So, Marlene, I'm open to any questions if there are.
Awesome. Yeah, there's actually, Pam has a few. Her first question, she says, it's been challenging for me to know how to handle my teen's need for sleep. Lately, she's had some insomnia, hormones maybe. I want her to be well-rested, but we need to start our days a little earlier. Any ideas?
Well, I think I kind of touched on that a little bit during my talk, just to think that if there's, I don't know, if there's a reason why you have to start your days earlier, or if your teen is able to start a little later so that she can sleep more, especially if she struggles with insomnia. It may be that once she's fallen asleep, you want to let her sleep as long as she can. For some kids, a cat nap in the middle of the day is really effective. A 20-minute nap can do wonders for refreshing a child. If she has insomnia, is she on the computer or watching TV just before bedtime? Being with a lit screen, the backlit screen or television, can simulate daylight for your brain and make it hard to go to sleep, which is one of the reasons that it's recommended to power down for a half an hour, 45 minutes, or an hour or so before you go to bed for adults and kids, because it helps to put you into sleep mode. It may be, Pam, that you need to think about or investigate some ways that that you can help her, like look up ways to help teens relax before bed or get better night's sleep. So hope that helps.
Okay, and then Pam also says, she says, my daughter struggles with doing research. In the past, I've let her do her work in her own room, no internet. However, she wouldn't produce anything. She actually can write. However, I think she psyched herself out about the assignment. Some people say to let the child fail, and others say to help them along in writing. Some say to not help the child too much, especially if taking an outside class. It's been a challenge for me as I see things that could be improved in her writing. She says she doesn't want me to provide input.
That's a really hard one. One of the things that I have learned through personal experience with my own son, as well as through the years of teaching writing classes, is that you will not handicap a child, even a young teen or a teen, by helping her with her assignments, especially if you are working side by side and you're modeling and you're asking questions. And it may be if she doesn't want help but she's not producing results, this is one of those character development opportunities for you and her, for you to come alongside her and say, I realize that you don't want my help, but unless you can produce results, it's showing me that you need instruction in this area, and so I'm going to come alongside you to teach you how to do this. So one of the things that you can do is teach her how to use the computer, like she can do research, but then unplug the computer or the internet or turn somehow disconnect her from the internet after she has done her research, so she's not tempted to go back and play on the computer. Because for many kids, they need the computer to do research, especially when they're teens. It may be that you need that she doesn't know what it is that she's supposed to do, and she's going to need some kind of guidance. She needs to have steps broken down. So you may, instead of saying you need to research your report, break it down into chunks so that she's researching one little aspect of her report. And show her how to take notes. Show her how to keep note cards, how to write down snippets from her research so she's not plagiarizing, and how to keep track of her sources. And these are things that you might just have to train her in, and part of that is just character development, because if she's not wanting your help but she's not producing the work, clearly you have to step in and take over a little more of the instruction. And realize, if she were in a public school setting or a Christian school, she would be sitting at a desk and a teacher would be teaching. Any of us who went to college know that we sit at a table or a desk or at a round, you know, at a discussion forum, and somebody is offering instruction. Instruction's not a bad thing, but it's something that we all need to receive. Whether we're going to a seminar or taking a college class or homeschooling, we need instruction and teaching. So hopefully those things will help to give you some things to chew on and put you on the right track.
Okay, and Mary Prather, she's asking if you have any helpful tips for motivating kids to reduce their clutter, specifically middle grade children.
Well, reducing their clutter. I don't know if Mary can clarify whether she's looking for how to get rid of stuff or how to organize. Part of it is teaching them, you know, that less can be better, that more is not necessarily better. And if they have, if it's too much clutter, like they have too much stuff, one of the things that I used to do with my kids was put away a number of their toys and games and then rotate them, and so that not everything was available all the time. And then when I would put these things away, then new things could come out. They felt like they were getting new toys. And it was kind of a fun way to do it, and it helped to keep, especially if you have a lot of kids and everybody's got stuff and it could just get so overwhelming. So I don't know if that was what she was looking for.
She added in how to willingly organize.
Part of it is making games of it, and that was something that I used to do when my kids were small, was think, you know, we would just go through their room and we would make a place for things. Like, this would be a basket for this, a bucket for that, a tray for that. And I'm not saying it always worked, and it didn't. And, you know, we'd start off with good intentions, and then they would end up, you know, we'd have to do it again in a few months. But just sometimes you have to sit with them side by side, one-on-one, help them to organize a bookshelf, help them to organize a toy box. And as they sort and go through, I know with some friends, what they do is when a new toy comes in or a new, game, the child has to choose something to give to a needy family or to Goodwill or something like that. So that it's just part of it is just reducing and keeping what you have to a minimum, so it makes it easier to keep things organized.
I like that idea. One thing comes in, another goes out.
I do that with clothes. There's only so much room in your closet.
Yeah, I like that idea. Well, it seems like those are our questions for tonight or for this afternoon, and I want to thank you so much for being with us for this session, Kim.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.